And now it's time for the Scores Bears post game show, starring Score football expert and former NFL player Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans, always live on the free Odyssey app.
For the better part of the next 90 minutes, I am your voice. This is Anthony Herron on the Post Show, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's my normal welcome. Had a little bit less gusto to it, but I appreciate my guy Sean Sears, who's on the ones and twos for me throughout the evening here as I'll take you up to Sunday Night Football on The Score. I appreciate him adding my little flavor to the open for the post show. But it is a bit disappointing, a bit dejecting to see, to have witnessed, to know the way that that game went down, where the Bears gave themselves every conceivable opportunity to leave Cleveland with a dub. And, you know, I was talking about it during pregame coverage, Luke Canellis, myself, and Cassie Carlson over at Fox 32. We were talking about it this morning, and as Lou was asking me about the game, I told him that I felt like, especially a few weeks ago, maybe it, over the last couple of games here, Joe Flacco putting up some numbers, folks began to respect what the Cleveland Browns had been in the process of putting together. But there was a stretch here where, you know, when it was Justin Fields returning from injury in Detroit with seven games to go, and there was a lot of talk of, you know, just, hey, as long as they can find a way to get Detroit and maybe Minnesota, there's going to be a lot of easy, a lot of winnable games remaining here. And this game, in some ways, I think was kind of sneaky to folks. I don't know, probably not in Hallis Hall, but just people who were talking about the closing stretch of games for the Bears when you have the number one defense in football, and especially when you look at the home-road splits for Cleveland and what they had been this season when folks came there and had the dog pound raining down on them and had Myles Garrett chasing folks all over the field, pushing blockers around, penetrating into the backfield. And then what has been surprising in recent weeks, the performance of Joe Flacco, all those things have equaled the Browns just finding ways over and over again. And today was just the latest example in the fourth quarter of a game where Cleveland was trailing, and especially when they've been trailing at home, another game where the Browns found a way. Bears went down in the game. 20-17 was the final score in Cleveland. The Browns found a way to win. And it was a game that I thought, especially in the first half, Justin Fields threw the ball. I thought he was at least decisive in the first half of the game. I thought he saw the field well. It's one of those things where in last week's game, I told you that I felt like he wasn't seeing things that cleanly against Detroit. But I felt like that upticked in the second half of last week's game, it enhanced the productivity, and going with a little bit of tempo in the second half of the game last week seemed to kind of jumpstart the Bears' passing attack a bit. Today was in some ways maybe the inverse, where I thought he was more decisive, threw the ball cleaner in the first half of the game. And I don't know that I wouldn't necessarily even say he became indecisive in the second half of the game, but it felt like there were some near misses, more near misses in the first half of the game today than there were in the second half of the game. But, you know, beyond the Bears quarterback, beyond Justin Fields, there were certainly so many moments in the game that felt like, all right, if the receiver makes this grab, or if, you know, that interior offensive lineman holds that block just a beat longer, that maybe there's more meat on the bone. And that's the thing, when you're in that environment, and there's only a few stadiums in the National Football League that kind of rival a college stadium, that feel like, you know what, you go on the road and you are just going to have this cascade of energy. And, whether it's just the booing, the volume of people, and the way that it infuses additional life and juice and energy into the home team. And Cleveland, is one of those environments. That's one of those stadiums, you know, Cleveland, Buffalo, Green Bay, that there's a few spots you go to that just feel almost collegiate in the energy that the crowd brings game in and game out and what they seem to do in enhancing the performance of the home team. So it is, you know, by NFL standards, it's one of the more intimidating places to play, and you add in that defense with that defensive front and what they can do to the opponent. And out of all the different levels of a defense, the D-line is the spot that benefits most from volume, and especially when you get opponents backed up. And field position-wise, Bears didn't do too poorly throughout the game today. There's certainly been some games, some matchups earlier in the season where starting field position went way to the advantage of the opponent. I didn't necessarily feel that today was one of those games, but it was a game where, you know, the Bears' run game was inconsistent, and it was a game where I felt like, you know, obviously, as many of you who listen to this station frequently know, that I've talked in detail about my concerns with Luke Getsy and how he's operated in certain games. And, you know, today is likely going to be one of those games where Luke Getsy goes to the film afterwards and say, hey, this play I called, like, that guy is schemed up where it looks like he's going to break open. And I don't necessarily think there's going to be that many examples where Getsy and Justin Fields go back and break down this film and say that Justin read it incorrectly. But it was a game to me where some of those near misses in the passing attack, whether it was Darnell Mooney one-on-one or Cole Kmet with some one-on-one matchups, DJ Moore, who, you know, he tried to attack and give DJ Moore some opportunities versus man coverage, and they just weren't able to connect that consistently. We know DJ Moore was struggling with an ankle. He pretty much missed, to my understanding, the entire week of practice and came here in the game and appeared to be on a little bit of a reps limit in the game today, whether that was partly conditioning or partly just in trying not to overexpose an ankle that was ailing him a little bit to kind of get through the full scope of the game. But, you know, he was out there, and he didn't look like the standard DJ Moore, the same old DJ Moore with all that additional explosion, especially after the catch. You know, there was even the one play in the first half where the ball gets batted into the air, and or maybe it was third quarter, ball gets batted into the air, and he makes the reception, and then just sees all these bodies of defenders. And, I mean, I think, you know, the term goes, the discretion is the better part of valor. So he's like, hey, I got, there's like five tacklers. I got one blocker. I think it was Darnell Mooney, as per usual. He's like the Bears' favorite, Luke Getsy's favorite lead blocker is Darnell Mooney. And he's out there, you know, trying to seal things off for DJ Moore. And DJ just, you know, normally he'll just see if he can do something Herculean after the catch, regardless of how many tacklers are out there. But something that we've rarely seen DJ Moore do after he made the reception, he wiggled around a little bit. Said, all right, I'm not going too far with this. And then just sort of gave himself up on the play. And, you know, I certainly don't discredit DJ Moore for the decision in that moment, but I would say that would be one of perhaps several examples in the game of him just not being at his full self, you know, a 100% version of DJ Moore. Credit to him, though, for being willing to go out there. You know, it's a game the Bears went into at 5-8 with an opportunity to try and have this stretch run, coming off back-to-back wins in the division, the first time that we've seen them able to do that since Matt Eberflus has been the coach. And DJ Moore fighting through that, Jaquan Brisker getting back into the lineup. Of course, Justin Fields, with his Bears career on the line or things of that ilk, you know, going out there with the, you know, the dislocated thumb. It still, you know, whether it's because of that, where he went with the gloves in the first half in slick conditions, but you know, we saw him trying to work through things as well. 312-644-6767 is the phone number to discuss what we just saw. Bears lose by three on the road. There's a couple of decisions in the game that I want to make sure I get into throughout the show tonight as well. Of course, the way things closed in the first half got a lot of conversation on social media, and since the game ended as well, Matt Eberflus explained some of the decision-making that went into that. There was an opportunity to potentially attempt a 55-yard-ish field goal from Cairo Santos. They didn't do that. And so additional scrutiny goes into that moment in the game where you lose by three, where your opponent kicks a field goal, and you know, they take a three-point lead after a somewhat furious third and fourth quarter comeback that we've seen this story before with the Bears. The Browns come back and take a lead there. But maybe there would have been, could have been, an opportunity to put three on the board. I got my thoughts on that that I'll share with you throughout the show before we get out of here when Sunday Night Football coverage begins. That Sunday Night Football game will be between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Baltimore Ravens. So you can hear that. All the live action, the Ravens at 10-3, the Jags at 8-5. It's a big game there. Both those opponents have faced Cleveland as of late. And I reminded folks, I tweeted it out this morning, just really the only quarterback who's really been effective or largely impactful in a game playing at Cleveland this season has been Lamar Jackson. And even by Lamar Jackson's standards, the yardage in that game, he threw for less than 190 yards, ran for less than 30 yards, but he had two passing touchdowns and two rushing touchdowns. And the Ravens defense played really well in that game when Baltimore was in Cleveland, and they came out with a win. I think it was 28-3 was the final score there. But it was a really efficient and controlled game by Lamar Jackson there when they played in Cleveland. Aside from that, pretty much every other quarterback this season that's played against that Browns defense on the road in Cleveland in that environment, and yes, the Browns defense has been a little bit banged up as well, but that is a deep and talented secondary. Those are fast and athletic linebackers. That is a deep and ferocious defensive front, and it showed up throughout the game today. And so in a lot of ways, you know, Justin Fields, certainly, especially in the first half of the game, but certainly some moments in the second half as well, I think, you know, had some opportunities there. And we'll talk about the drops throughout the show tonight. There were many of them. There were plentiful. And when it started with Robert Tonyan and a play that was well schemed up by Luke Getsy and Justin Fields under some duress, and we knew he was going to be under duress going in. I'm sure he was not surprised that he took some hits in the game. But one of the plays where Getsy schemed up a nice shot play, very similar to a play from last week's game where it looked like there may have been an opportunity to hit Cole Kmet on a corner route. Here they ran a very similar action where they ran fake toss to the wide side of the field. Justin Fields bootlegs out the backside. He had, I believe it was Kari Blasingame who kind of helped seal the edge. So the edge defender for Cleveland was kind of held off for a moment. And Justin Fields threw a beautiful pass with some touch and just hits Robert Tonyan right in stride as he's running in the open field. He's got the linebacker beat, and the ball bounced what felt like, I don't know, 5, 6, 30 times off Tonyan's hands, and then he goes sprawling across the ground because he couldn't haul that one in. So that could have been a, you know, whatever, 60-ish yard touchdown catch and run off a lovely pass by Fields, and a play that was schemed up well by Luke Getsy. That one was unrequited. But honestly, from that point, there were several passes in a row after that Justin Fields was just on the money. A nice back shoulder to DJ Moore, a few other really precise passes as well. But that was kind of the harbinger of things to come, if you will, after that drop by Tonyan. There were other drops in the game as well. But it was not a game that was just completely marred by drops. The pass protection against, again, one of the better, deeper, more talented defensive fronts in football, you saw at times where running backs like Khalil Herbert, who has improved in pass protection, but you know, he's still not a, let's say, a David Montgomery type guy who you just know is going to stone defenders consistently when he's up there chip blocking and trying to take on linebackers in the hole. So Khalil Herbert has had his moments of struggle. Lucas Patrick had his moments of struggle. And certainly with those edge defenders, with Myles Garrett, with Za'Darius Smith, the offensive tackles, I thought, held up fairly well. But on the whole, the offense being so pocket-based, the passing attack for the Bears being so pocket-based, the moments of misdirection, there were some times where Luke Getsy, not only when he called Justin Fields into some movement, which I just thought today's game was another example of being too infrequent, calling Justin Fields into movement here, but there were some nice moments in the run game as well where he was able to use Velus Jones to outflank things. And, you know, again, to be fair, it's one of those things where if one of those reverses or sweeps to Velus Jones gets a tackle for loss, then of course everybody would be shouting at the TV, why are you even giving the ball to Velus Jones? You know, look, that guy hadn't made a play the whole time he's been a Chicago Bear. But the play worked. And so credit to Luke Getsy for well-designed plays called at proper times, and then Velus Jones able to outflank the defense. And he had a couple of nice plays. Two carries for 23 yards in the game for Velus Jones. Now Tyler Scott, in short yardage scenarios, you know, running reverse or sweep, you know, whatever we might call the Tyler Scott play in short yardage, that didn't go so well. And Tyler Scott is not Bayless Jones. He doesn't have Bayless Jones's frame. He's not as adept as a runner, at least from what we've seen from Tyler Scott. So today had a couple of other examples of just trying to outsmart the opponent and perhaps complicating things in short yardage scenarios in a way that just seemed unnecessary. A little bit overkill there from Luke Getsy, especially in some short yardage situations here. 312-644-6767. Let me get a caller or two in before I take my first time out here on the Post Show. Patrick is in Chicago. Let's get Patrick involved. Patrick, you're with Anthony on the Post Show. What's happening?
Hey, how you doing? I'm not going to be one of them guys that says that the referees cost the game, but the NFL's got to take a look at them. At the end of the half, the defensive guy that hit Fields took four steps, and he laid him out right in front of the referee, and he doesn't throw the flag. In the New York game, Tommy DeVito, whatever his name is, gets absolutely whiffed in the head. Referee doesn't throw the flag. You see call after call after call, absolutely blown by these referees. And I know this isn't going to go over big, but I'm starting to believe they're betting on football because you can't be that bad. They can't be that inept. And the NFL is married to gambling now, and it ain't like it was when Paul Hornung got caught and Alex Karras got caught. You don't have to go to the bar and see the bookie. You can get on a phone, on a burner phone, and make all the bets you want. Something is wrong, and Roger Goodell needs to stay out of trying to go to Europe and play football and worry about these referees. Pass interference is not called. Roughing the passer not called. I mean, if he calls that play throws the flag on the hit on Fields, which was an obvious one, I mean, it couldn't have been more blatant than it's a 40-yard field goal. And it's just getting old. And the worst part about it is Fields said, I have talked to him. I told him, I'm not going to try to fake the slide. I'm not going to fake going out of bounds and keep running. And he says the referees just look at him, and they don't call it. Someone told me today that he has not got one time this season have they thrown a flag for him sliding and getting hit.
Right.
And it just goes on and on.
I feel your frustration with it, Patrick, because I can only imagine how frustrated Justin Fields is. And the example we heard, some folks talking about it during the broadcast and media who were there at the game as well, talking to Matt Eberflus about it. Seemed like today, in-game, in that moment, was the most boisterous, the most upset, the most animated that Matt Eberflus has been as he got after the officials in that moment also. And to me, it's one thing when Fields is running a zone read and he's keeping the football, because there was one that maybe could have been a little bit borderline on a zone read type of play. Maybe it was a QB sweep. I haven't done my second watch of the game yet. But, one where he slides and the defender kind of hits him a little bit, that because I think all of our radar are up so much, then we see that moment, how does he not get that call? But the one that caller Patrick is describing there at the end of the first half, where Fields, he extends the play, he's running sideways, and he throws he is in a passing posture the entire time. There's no legitimate threat of Justin Fields taking off and running in that moment, and he passes it, and the defender from the Browns takes certainly multiple steps. I don't know if it was four, but it was certainly two or more, and then just cleans his clock. And what's important about the result of that moment is that it's, and we'll continue this conversation after I take a timeout, specifically about that play and the decision that was made there. But Fields throws the ball, throws a Hail Mary down toward the end zone. Now just think about that, because the half would not end on a defensive penalty. And so if they would have called unnecessary roughness on the Browns defender for hitting Fields, the ball moves forward another 15 yards for a personal foul. And so you do have a more than makeable field goal for Cairo Santos. That could have just cleared up anything from a decision-making perspective. And we'll see how quickly they end up overturning they ruled it an interception that Fields threw in that last moment. Seemed to me pretty clearly a live action. I'm glad Fox ended up getting back around to showing everyone that, no, that wasn't an interception. The defender didn't catch it. But if the official does throw that flag, which that's the referee, the white hat, every different official has the title for their position on the field. The white hat is the referee, the official that's there behind the defensive line in the box, that's the umpire. You got the back judge, the side judge, the head linesman, the line judge. Like, everybody's got their own title for their position on the field. The white hat is normally behind the football somewhere. And in that scenario, when the quarterback's rolling out, I mean, the white hat, the referee, that's the main gig, especially in the NFL. is to watch and make sure no one's doing anything dirty to the QB. No one's hitting the QB late, whether or not it's a sack fumble or if it's going to be an incomplete pass. Their eyes are mainly on the QB. So for the referee to be sitting there watching Justin Fields take a hit at that moment, seemingly that late after the ball is gone, that to me is the most egregious one that's taken place. Of any of this extra attention we've given in recent weeks, recent months, I mean, it's certainly come up a lot over the last couple of years, but it's come up even more so, I would say, this season, because it feels like it's been pretty frequent in Justin Fields' career. The majority of the moments that have been worthy of question for me have been when Justin Fields has tucked the football and become a runner, and then he slides. Is he sliding a little bit late? Is he sliding awkwardly? Is the defender kind of in this indecisive position because he can't tell what Justin's doing? Justin has gotten more definitive and decisive with his sliding this season. But then also, the particular play we're talking about right here, there was no doubt about it. He wasn't taking off and running. This wasn't a defender who was coming at him head on, trying to determine whether or not Justin's going to drop his shoulder on him or something like that. This is just a quarterback in a passing posture, rolling away from the defender who has obviously thrown the football away and heaved it in the end zone on an end of half Hail Mary and doesn't get the call there. That to me was the most egregious non-call that Justin Fields hasn't gotten the entire season. And then it ends up being a game that's decided by 3 points. And so there are these additional levels to how big that missed call ends up being. Now, I'm not one who tends to go down any conspiracy route or anything like that. So, you know, caller Patrick talking about, you know, folks gambling on the games and all that, I'm not going to sit here and say it's impossible. I think it's maybe somewhat implausible, but who knows, man. Let me get to a timeout there. I do want to talk about that end of half scenario because we're evaluating everything here. We'll talk more Justin Fields. We got some callers on the line wanting to talk through some of that. But then also the in-game decision making of Matt Eberflus and just him as a head coach. We know the strides the defense is making. I'm going to talk a lot of Montez Sweat here as well. But then just Eberflus and the decision he made in that moment. What factored into it? What were my thoughts on that? Certainly want to get your thoughts on it as well. 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. Anthony Heron, this is the Post-Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more of the Score's Bears Post-Postgame Show with Anthony Heron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans, always live on the free Odyssey app.
And so they are going to keep the offense on the field on fourth down. This is right at the range for Cairo Santos. They've got four seconds to go and a timeout.
Oh, man.
Nope, they're just going to air this one out. So they're going to turn down a long field goal try and go instead with a long Hail Mary to the end zone. The jump ball deflected around, and the pass is going to be intercepted. And that's going to end the streak for Fields of interceptionless football. It's picked off by Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa.
Unnecessary hit for Fields. Maybe because they didn't want to kick to that end of the field. I don't know.
Well, it's the end of the first half with a 7-7 ball game.
That's how it sounded on the television broadcast. Kevin Kugler, Mark Sanchez on the call there with the Bears and the Browns. This is the Post-Post Show on The Score. I'm taking you up to Sunday night football coverage as Jacksonville will host Baltimore 8-5 versus 10-3. You'll hear that action here on The Score in just over an hour. Pregame will begin. And, of course, you can tune in all day Monday for reaction to Bears versus Browns. Gabe Ramirez will be live overnight from 12 to 5 a.m., followed by Mullion Hall, Bernstein and Holmes, and Parkins and Spiegel throughout your work day. So hang out with us on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Busey Bank and It's Not a Game Illinois.com. All of it can be heard on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app. So that moment in the game where it's the end of the half, score is tied at 7, Bears have the ball, and now, you know, the analytics crowd, let's call them, you know, there have been a lot of folks taking issue with Matt Eberflus taking the ball first, getting into that script right off the bat. It's gone, you know, pretty successfully for the Bears, where they've been competitive in a variety of games and won back-to-back and whatever it was, 3 out of their last 5 or something like that. But analytics crowd has taken issue with Matt Eberflus taking the ball, just like he's trying to take the North, him and Poles. They're taking the ball and you know, trying to get a hot start on offense. So this game, Cleveland won the toss. Cleveland took the ball. So this was an opportunity for a two-for-one, whether you want to call it doubling up or two-for-one, the terms that we use in football parlance and sports parlance. So the Bears had an opportunity in the half with the ball and points, and then you know you're getting the ball first coming out of the locker room in the third quarter as well. Now, they had, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of time on the clock when the drive began, but you got a nice run from Roschon Johnson out near the 30-yard line. And so that changed the calculus a little bit. So the Bears got a little bit more aggressive, a couple of nice passes to Cole Kmet. Next thing you know, you're crossing midfield like, hey, man, we got a chance for something here. But clock is ticking, and then you got to the point where we know just got one play that will remain here. What do you do? It'd be roughly a 55-yard field goal for Cairo Santos. Now, Kevin Kugler did say during the broadcast that they'd seen Cairo Santos hitting from 55 during the pregame. Normally how these things operate is that, you know, the spotter for Kevin Kugler, for the announcers in general, a lot of times the spotter will try to do an effective job of looking at the place kicker during the pregame and just seeing how are pregame warmups going for them. You may even ask the head coach, whether it's when you talk to them during the week or certainly when you get the opportunity during the game, to get a sense for what's a comfortable distance for the place kicker. So the announcers will try to go into these situations with some of that information in the bag already. Now, the career long for Cairo Santos is 55 yards. I doubt Cairo Santos has hit from 55 in today's conditions, a game that's in whatever it was, in the 30s or 40s, and it's rainy and blustery winds, 30-plus mile-an-hour winds. And here's what I believe factored into it. We'll hear from Matt Eberflus. I'll have Sean play that for you in a moment here. But I tweeted it out, you know, during the half as well. My impression was that that would have tied the career long for Cairo Santos that he has hit in pristine, in ideal conditions. You could certainly make the case. It's the last play of the half. Who cares if you miss a field goal? But I try to remind folks, you got to, like, whether you're talking about going for a fourth down or attempting a long field goal, you got to factor the opponent into this as well. The Cleveland Browns, they've got one of the better field goal rush units in the National Football League. Like, Myles Garrett goes hard when he's out there in those moments. Za'Darius Smith is trying to block kicks when he's out there. We saw what that interior of the Browns defensive line, the same individuals who would be out there trying to block the field goal, we saw that in short yardage scenarios, the Bears' legitimate offensive line in their natural positions couldn't block the guys there, let alone putting the long snapper in there in the middle of it with other, you know, field goal protection, which, yes, some of the offensive linemen are largely out there on field goal protection as well. So there's multiple factors. One, to tie his career long in those conditions, those weather conditions in Cleveland, Cairo Santos would have had to drive the ball out low to have the trajectory to get the distance on the football to cut it through that chilly, biting wind. So he would have had to drive it out low, which would have enhanced the possibility, perhaps even likelihood, you know, you might be willing to use the term, I would certainly be willing to consider that term, that someone would have a chance to block it from Cleveland with the excellence of their field goal rush team. So maybe they block it. If it goes backwards, now you have an opportunity for the opponent who you've been able to lock down for the majority of the first half, but maybe they get cheap points at the end of the half there, either by blocking the field goal and then getting a scoop and score, or you also have the potential for a long field goal return. Now, if you try a long field goal out just in any other random moment of the game, that's not the final play of a half, it's less likely that the return team would really try to do something tricky or be uber aggressive with that. At the end of the half, there's a feeling that there's less to lose there. So not only is there the potential that they can block it, it goes backwards, get a scoop and score, but a field goal that could come up short, they may catch it and get a return while you have a bunch of big bodies, a lot of them offensive linemen and tight end types that are out there in your field goal protection. You know, some teams will have, a lot of teams do have their long field goal protection team, but then if you put some smaller bodies out there who are more effective in covering long field goals, now it's even more likely that the Cleveland Browns in that front are going to be able to block it. So there's multiple levels to what gets factored in there. You also add in the fact that the Bears will get the football first in the third quarter. So I do believe that that's a big part of the calculus. In the end, the most important thing is, how confident are you that your place kicker can hit from that distance? And I understand that 55 is his career long. If you told me Cairo Santos' career long was 65 in pristine conditions, hey, man, all right, 55 in that weather, maybe you go for it. He's got a nice leg. We've heard Richard Hightower talk throughout the season about the work that Santos has put into enhancing his leg strength. That's admirable. 55 yards at his career long in pristine conditions, 55 in those conditions today in Cleveland, it doesn't surprise me one bit that they didn't feel confident about Cairo Santos getting that. Then when you factor in the other potential for Cleveland blocking it, scooping it, scoring, returning, there's a lot of other stuff that really could have gone horribly wrong. So they decided to go with the Hail Mary. And frankly, if the officials didn't mess the call up, it should have turned into a far more makeable kick for Cairo Santos. But in the end, the decision that Eberflus made, I get it. You know, like, was it borderline? Maybe, maybe not. Sean, let's go ahead and play Bears coach Matt Eberflus talking about what he ended up. You know, I just kind of gave my summation of what I believed factored into it, and I tried to include that in a tweet during halftime that I put out there at Big Ant Heron. But what did Matt Eberflus himself say about that after the game?
Then at the end of the half, you know, we got it down, you know, to field goal, right outside of field goal range, and that was going into the wind. And that was just too far of a kick for us to make that attempt there. That's how we end up throwing it to the end zone. And we have to do a good job of, you know, obviously protecting our quarterback on that one. You know, there's a couple steps there with the hit. But again, we'll look at that one and on that. So that was the first half.
That wasn't even as, you know, probably as detailed as far as the levels of why he didn't attempt it. As what, you know, as far as the concerns of them potentially blocking it and some of those things, my impression, if that wasn't a factor, it should have been with the way that Cleveland has the potential to get after their field goal rush unit. But, you know, I think that in addition to it being out of Cairo Santos's range, which should be the chief factor, the biggest factor, but in addition to that, when it's out of his range, he's going to drive it lower. He's going to hit somebody in the face mask on that field goal block unit, and then you got all kind of other problems that you need to consider. 312-644-6767 is the phone line here. Let's sneak another caller in before I take another timeout. Wiley is out in Logan Square. Wiley, what's happening? You're on the Post Show.
How you doing, Ann? You know, I want to go back to Justin for a second. Let me, as a preface, just say I'm a Justin Fields fan. But Having said that, today's game showed all the warts, and as well as the incredible things he's capable of doing, you know. So my sense of it is that over time, he's probably, with experience, he's probably going to be able to eliminate a lot of the problems, but not all of them. He's not a perfect guy. He's never going to be a perfect guy. There's a ceiling there, but he's on some level, but he's got an incredible talent. And so that's the dilemma for the Bears. You know, do you trade off on that, you know, stay with the talent and try to build it up around him, or do you cut bait? And I just hope that the executives there, starting with Poles, don't put their own self-interest ahead of the team by taking the easy out, which is just grabbing somebody in the draft, because that's what GMs do when they have these high number ones and they cover their own rear ends that way for a while. But this is like really something you have to think about. I like Poles. I think he has the stones to do it. But he needs to at least consider it, you know, and explain why he isn't going that route.
I feel you, Wiley. I do, and I appreciate the call. And there are so many levels, you know, to this thing, as tends to be the case with a decision of this magnitude, because it is the number one overall pick in the draft. And the main thing that people highlight, understandably, rightfully so, about Caleb Williams, the player who is currently here mid-December, the presumed number one overall pick in this coming draft cycle, and he has been for a couple of seasons now, the presumed number one overall pick in this coming draft cycle, just like, you know, Trevor Lawrence was pretty quickly presumed as the guy who would end up being the number one overall pick when he came out in the draft, the same draft cycle as Justin Fields, and just like, you know, Andrew Luck was for quite some time before that. Like, Joe Burrow was a guy who kind of late in the process, really just based off his final season, his fifth year in college, final year at LSU, then Joe Burrow became the presumptive number one overall pick in that draft cycle. And that's normally how these things end up going. Caleb Williams is one of these guys who is a bit of a rare breed, as someone who for years now has been seen as the player that would end up becoming the number one overall pick. And as of right now, that's still the evaluation of Caleb Williams. But as you get. It used to be a thing where Mark Sanchez, who was calling the game today, he was one of these players that when he came out in the draft, you know, felt like, all right, he could use a little bit more seasoning. Like, maybe if Mark Sanchez goes back to USC one more year, they could sprinkle a little Lowry's on him and just kind of get him more ready for success right off the bat in the NFL. Now, just 3 years in, where Caleb Williams, after year two, it felt like there was just this spotless sort of pristine resume. And the evaluation of Caleb Williams was like, he is the perfect quarterback prospect. Now, getting the opportunity to watch him in what is just his third season out of high school, but they play so much football, and you see so many snaps, especially snaps of him as a passer and under duress and in hostile environments. Now, this past season, we have seen that, yes, he is imperfect. There were games where he did struggle, and that's tapered back some of the hyperbole about Caleb Williams. It's probably overdone it a little bit. He's still an exceptional prospect, but the difficulty of the decision that Ryan Poles will have to make will be the fact that he has a current prospect at quarterback who does, to Wiley's point, show this potential, has shown the ability to make plays in the National Football League, even the game today. Like, yes, the streak of games and passes without interceptions comes to an end here. One of them, in a game where he was ruled to have two interceptions, one of them wasn't actually an interception on a Hail Mary at the end of the first half. The other one was a Hail Mary to end the game that did get intercepted after it bounced into the stomach of his teammate. So, I mean, you know, he's protecting the football at a higher level. And I do want to talk through, I'll take a time out and come back. I do want to talk through that magnificent play on the touchdown pass that Justin Fields threw to Cole Kmet, just as an example of some of the growth that we do continue to see from the Chicago QB. Get into talking to the Bears defense as well, in a game that certainly, as all the excitement of what the Bears had begun showing and the wins getting in back-to-back weeks, I haven't used the word streak yet. To me, a streak is three or more. I don't know the dictionary definition of a streak, but back-to-back wins was worthy of getting excited about. We all did. There was a potential to get a streak going today in what to me was going to be the toughest test for the Bears offense, and they weren't able to make that happen. But there was one moment that really stood out to me that I was very impressed by in a series that almost went horribly wrong for the Bears offense, and Justin Fields was able to snatch a touchdown from the clutches of what was almost a forced fumble and a drive that went woefully wrong. So let me take a time out, come back, and we'll describe that moment for you next year. This is the Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Fields looking, backside pressure. Fields spins away. Going the other direction now. Fields on the run. Throws for the end zone. Kmet with the catch. The toe tap and the touchdown. Cole Kmet gets six. But give Justin Fields the credit there.
I mean, that was quite a moment, man. I don't spend a lot of time when I'm watching football yelling at the TV. But it was exciting. And there's so many of those moments when you're watching this version of the Bears offense and you're watching Justin Fields, but there's also a lot of the moments at the other end of that spectrum as well. So you get Myles Garrett doing Myles Garrett stuff. You know, he's able to work through the upfield shoulder, the outside shoulder of Braxton Jones, and he's nearly able to bring down Justin Fields. We got to remember that full sequence where Eddie Jackson got his first interception of the season leading into that moment, that drive, but it's the Cleveland Browns defense. It's the home version of the number one defense in football. So they're remarkable when they play in that stadium, man. And so the Bears get the ball inside the 5-yard line off of that Eddie Jackson interception. Who knows, man? Maybe the younger, more spry version of Eddie Jackson, maybe he finds a way to get that one into the end zone. So he does it. And now we're all just on pins and needles. All right, what's the offense going to do with this one? Because Eddie couldn't get it to the house. So what's next? How are they going to get this thing into the end zone against this defense? And then the Browns defense, after just stuffing the Bears over and over again, like, all right, let's go Deontay Foreman. Let's make this thing happen. And they just tried inside zone over and over again. And I heard Olin mention it, actually, during the postgame show with Mully and Patrick Manley. I agree with Olin, man. If with all the penetration that Cleveland was getting. It would have been nice to see them try to mix it up to get some gap scheme going and see if you can use the penetration, that forward force that Cleveland is bringing, see if you can use that against them to get some angle blocks. When you're talking zone scheme versus gap scheme, essentially, to try to simplify without belaboring the point much, zone scheme, you're going to get more of a forward charge, and a lot of times it's with footwork that's operating in unison from the offensive line. But in a gap scheme, a lot of times you get a puller going, and you'll have guys coming from the opposite direction with angles to their blocks to be able to utilize the momentum of the defender against them. And with the way that the Browns were operating, like one thing I liked that Luke Getsy did in game as a little bit of a changeup, we did see a couple of screen passes to running backs that were effective against that hard charge and pass rush. Some gap scheme. I really thought it was a great point by Olin, unsurprisingly, great point that he made to get some gap scheme going. And maybe that would have been an opportunity for the Bears to try and spring a run or two. But in that scenario, the Bears were going nowhere, man. Like whether it was handing it to Deontay Foreman, whether it was QB sneak, some movement of the pocket, just nothing was working. But Cleveland continued to extend the drive via penalty over and over again. And so the Bears just kept getting more chances, but then it still came down to, I think it was on third and goal, and that play that Sean played coming out of the break where Myles Garrett just runs through the shoulder. I mean, there was a combination of speed and power that Myles Garrett ends up rushing through the upfield shoulder of Braxton Jones, and it's just almost like that play that ended the game in his Fields' his first game back from injury in Detroit. Where Aiden Hutchinson was just on top of Justin Fields before he knew what to do with it. Fields, a couple of things I loved about the play. One thing, you saw multiple moments in the game today as he was running around with both hands tightly and securely around the football, both in the pocket and outside the pocket. We're looking for moments of evaluation here, moments of growth. Is that growth going to end up being enough for the Bears not to utilize the number one pick in the draft on impressive quarterbacks? You can get them on a rookie deal and all that other stuff. That may not end up being the case. But just in evaluating Justin Fields, you're seeing a guy just trying to get better at the minutia of the quarterback position. And when you see Myles Garrett from his blind side get, I believe, both hands on Justin Fields, as he immediately, like right off the snap, just works through that upfield shoulder of Braxton Jones. He's not able to pull down Justin Fields. Fields shows strength, contact balance, a little bit of dexterity as he's pirouetting around in the backfield. And then as he's starting to run in one direction, he's going to take off and run again. After Myles Garrett has sort of spun him around, he's like, all right, I'm facing this way. I'm going to run in that direction anyway. Somehow, Myles Garrett is still there. He's still waiting on Justin Fields as he's getting ready to take off and run in that direction. He's like, well, I'm not going to run into that guy. So then he plants his foot in the ground after the pirouette and runs back in the complete opposite direction. What I loved about the moment, though, is that he's got two hands around the football that entire time. Fumbling has been such an issue, of course, for Justin Fields throughout his Bears career. And there were multiple examples in the game today, knowing what he's going to face from that Browns pass rush, where that, to me, there were multiple examples of just him improving with those mechanics of the quarterback position. Now, he's in year three. It might almost sound a little bit like just sort of, damning with faint praise, where, yeah, you want a quarterback to be secure with his mechanics, with protecting the football in those moments, but he's better at that. And today, that moment was one that I thought was a great example of that. But then not only keeping two hands around the footballs, he's got Myles Garrett and all those behemoths, from the all those, lichens out there from the Cleveland Browns defensive front chasing him all over the place. But eyes are downfield the entire time as he extends the play laterally. He picks up the top gear. And then just as the moment strikes, at the moment of truth, he flips those shoulders around, squares into the line, and throws that BB to Cole Kmet on a third and goal play for the touchdown. So it was a really fun play to watch play out. It was an example of what the otherworldly ability can be at times from Justin Fields, while also part of the evaluation as well is, yes, you want to see more consistency of him being decisive. You want to see more consistency with some of the nuance as a passer that still evades him. While at the same time, this was another game to me where his offensive play caller was so pocket-based with the offense, and I didn't understand it against that pass rush and that blitz package and everything else. 312-644-6767. I know we got Tim, Chad, and Jeff, others on the line. Phone lines are lit up. Want to get your thoughts not only on Justin Fields and the decision the Bears would make on what we saw today. Missed opportunity here where the Bears could have. I mean, they would have been right on the cusp of things if they could have gotten that game in Cleveland today. But it was another example with them not being able to close the deal. But a lot of folks want to get involved in this conversation. Let me take a timeout, come back at the top of the hour, and make sure I let you get involved in this conversation. This is the Post-Post Show. I'm Anthony Herron. After the Bears lose on the road in Cleveland, we're getting your reactions next on The Score.
Fields looking. Backside pressure. Fields spins away. Going the other direction now. Fields on the run. Throws for the end zone. Komet with the catch, the toe tap, and the touchdown. Cole Komet gets six, but give Justin Fields the credit there.
That was quite a moment, man. I don't spend a lot of time when I'm watching football yelling at the TV, but it was exciting. And there's so many of those moments when you're watching this version of the Bears offense and you're watching Justin Fields, but there's also a lot of the moments at the other end of that spectrum as well. So you get Myles Garrett doing Myles Garrett stuff. You know, he's able to work through the upfield shoulder, the outside shoulder of Braxton Jones, and he's nearly able to bring down Justin Fields. We got to remember that full sequence where Eddie Jackson got his first interception of the season leading into that moment, that drive, but it's the Cleveland Browns defense. It's the home version of the number one defense in football. So they're remarkable when they play in that stadium, man. And so the Bears get the ball inside the 5-yard line off of that Eddie Jackson interception. Who knows, man? Maybe the younger, more spry version of Eddie Jackson, maybe he finds a way to get that one into the end zone. So he does it. And now we're all just on pins and needles. All right, what's the offense going to do with this one? Because Eddie couldn't get it to the house. So what's next? How are they going to get this thing into the end zone against this defense? And then the Browns defense, after just stuffing the Bears over and over again, they're like, all right, let's go Deontay Foreman. Let's make this thing happen. And they just tried inside zone over and over again. And I heard Olin mention it, actually, during the post-game show with Mully and Patrick Manley. I agree with Olin, man. If with all the penetration that Cleveland was getting, it would have been nice to see them try to mix it up to get some gap scheme going and see if you can use the penetration, that forward force that Cleveland is bringing, see if you can use that against them to get some angle blocks. When you're talking zone scheme versus gap scheme, essentially, to try to simplify without belaboring the point much, zone scheme, you're going to get more of a forward charge, and a lot of times it's with footwork that's operating in unison from the offensive line. But in a gap scheme, a lot of times you get a puller going and you'll have guys coming from the opposite direction with angles to their blocks to be able to utilize the momentum of the defender against them. And with the way that the Browns were operating, like, one thing I liked that Luke Getsy did in game as a little bit of a changeup, we did see a couple of screen passes to running backs that were effective against that hard charge and pass rush. Some gap scheme. I really thought it was a great point by Olin, unsurprisingly, great point that he made to get some gap scheme going. And maybe that would have been an opportunity for the Bears to try and spring a run or two. But in that scenario, the Bears were going nowhere, man. Like, whether it was handing it to Deontay Foreman, whether it was QB sneak, some movement of the pocket, just nothing was working. But Cleveland continued to extend the drive via penalty over and over again. And so the Bears just kept getting more chances, but then it still came down to, I think it was on third and goal, and that play that Sean played coming out of the break where Myles Garrett just runs through the shoulder. I mean, it was a combination of speed and power that Myles Garrett ends up rushing through the upfield shoulder of Braxton Jones, and it's just almost like that play that ended the game in his Fields' first game back from injury in Detroit, where Aiden Hutchinson was just on top of Justin Fields before he knew what to do with it. Fields, a couple of things I loved about the play. One thing, you saw multiple moments in the game today as he was running around with both hands tightly and securely around the football, both in the pocket and outside the pocket. We're looking for moments of evaluation here, moments of growth. Is that growth going to end up being enough for the Bears not to utilize the number one pick in the draft on impressive quarterbacks? You can get them on a rookie deal and all that other stuff. That may not end up being the case. But just in evaluating Justin Fields, you're seeing a guy just trying to get better at the minutia of the quarterback position. And when you see Myles Garrett from his blind side get, I believe, both hands on Justin Fields, as he immediately, like right off the snap, just works through that upfield shoulder of Braxton Jones. He's not able to pull down Justin Fields. Fields shows strength, contact balance, a little bit of dexterity as he's pirouetting around in the backfield. And then as he's starting to run in one direction, he's going to take off and run again. After Myles Garrett has sort of spun him around, he's like, all right, I'm facing this way. I'm going to run in that direction anyway. Somehow, Myles Garrett is still there. He's still waiting on Justin Fields as he's getting ready to take off and run in that direction. He's like, well, I'm not going to run into that guy. So then he plants his foot in the ground after the pirouette and runs back in the complete opposite direction. What I loved about the moment, though, is that he's got two hands around the football that entire time. Fumbling has been such an issue, of course, for Justin Fields throughout his Bears career. And there were multiple examples in the game today, knowing what he's going to face from that Browns pass rush, where that, to me, there were multiple examples of just him improving with those mechanics of the quarterback position. Now, he's in year three. It might almost sound a little bit like just sort of, you know, damning with faint praise, where, yeah, you want a quarterback to be secure with his mechanics, with protecting the football in those moments, but he's better at that. And today, that moment was one that I thought was a great example of that. But then not only keeping two hands around the footballs, he's got Myles Garrett and all those behemoths, you know, from the all those, you know, lichens out there from the Cleveland Browns defensive front chasing him all over the place. But eyes are downfield the entire time as he extends the play laterally. He picks up the top gear. And then just as the moment strikes, at the moment of truth, he flips those shoulders around, squares into the line, and throws that BB to Cole Kmet on a third and goal play for the touchdown. So it was a really fun play to watch play out. It was an example of what the otherworldly ability can be at times from Justin Fields, while also part of the evaluation as well is, yes, you want to see more consistency of him being decisive. You want to see more consistency with some of the nuance as a passer that still evades him. While at the same time, this was another game to me where his offensive play caller was so pocket-based with the offense, and I didn't understand it against that pass rush and that blitz package and everything else. 312-644-6767. I know we got Tim, Chad, and Jeff. Others on the line. Phone lines are lit up. Want to get your thoughts not only on Justin Fields and the decision the Bears would make on what we saw today. Missed opportunity here where the Bears could have. I mean, they would have been right on the cusp of things if they could have gotten that game in Cleveland today. But it was another example with them not being able to close the deal. But a lot of folks want to get involved in this conversation. Let me take a timeout, come back at the top of the hour, and make sure I let you get involved in this conversation. This is the Post Show. I'm Anthony Herron. After the Bears lose on the road in Cleveland, we're getting your reactions next on The Score.